This is Tuesday, May 9th at 9:30 a.m. here in the State Capitol Building, the time and place for the Public Utilities Commission meeting. This is Vice Chairman Dusty Johnson. Joining telephonically is Chairman Bob Saar, and we have a number of people participating telephonically. Jeff Decker from Northwestern Energy, are you on the line?
Yes, I am here, and Pam Bonrud is with me as well.
Good morning, Pam.
Morning.
Colleen Savold with Quest.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Commissioner.
And we've already heard from Jim Wilcox this morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Is anyone else joining us via telephone? Hearing none, we'll proceed with the first action item on the agenda, Consumer Reports, a status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by this commission. Ms. Gregg?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. The commission has received a total of 200 contacts since the last report was prepared for the April 11th, 2006 commission meeting. 30 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 36 of the contacts involved electrical services, 29 contacts involved natural gas, 32 contacts involved cellular phone service, 31 contacts were related to the do not call, and 42 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 728 of the 826 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,671 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thanks. Any questions for Ms. Gregg? Hearing none, we'll proceed to electricity item number one, EL05027. This is the matter of the filing by Northwestern for approval of tariff revisions. And the question for the commission this morning is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? Mr. Decker, Ms. Bonrud?
Yes, thank you. At the April 11th commission meeting, the commission considered approval of Northwestern Energy's electric general terms and conditions filing. After consideration by the commission, there was one remaining issue that the commission requested further information. The company was requested to provide the costs associated with return check charges. Northwestern has since provided the requested cost support for the $15 check charge. As the costs related to this final issue have been documented and provided to commission staff, Northwestern respectfully asks for approval of the electric general terms and conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Decker. Mr. Jacobson, Ms. Greff?
Thank you, Commissioner. with the cost information provided by the company, staff feels comfortable now with recommending approval of the filing as revised since it was initially filed. So.
Chairman Saar, any questions?
I have none.
Nor do I. With that, a motion is in order.
I would move approval.
Second. Thank you very much, Mr. Decker and Ms. Bonrud. Electricity
you.
Item number two, EL06004, in the matter of the filing for approval of a territorial agreement regarding electric service between the City of Pierre and the Ouahi Electric Cooperative. I see we have John Brown stepping to the mic. Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Commissioner and members of the Commission. I'm representing the City of Pierre as the city attorney. The territorial agreement that's before you really arose out of a past effort on the part of the city to look at annexation in the areas of sections 21 and 22 north of the city limits of the City of Pierre. That particular area is a logical area for the city to expand into as it grows. In looking at annexation, and I want to clarify up front that at the current time, no particular annexation is being proposed, and we're not looking at that in any immediate sense, but just recognize that as annexation occurs, that is the likely area where it will occur. But when we were looking at the previous annexation proposal, Ouahi Electric, as the service provider in that particular territory, it was obvious that we were quite a ways apart in terms of purchasing out Ouahi Electric's utility service in that area and the amount that would cost. That obviously created concern both on the parts of the City of Pierre and Ouahi Electric. Subsequently, our annexation plans were dropped at that time, but the concern that had been raised regarding the electric service territory continued. We then commenced through initiative of Oahe Electric, Brad Scott, manager, and Mayor Eisenick, the city of Pierre, initiated negotiations as to providing definite service territories or entering into an agreement where service territories would be set. Frankly, those negotiations broke down at some point, and there was a proposal by Oahe Electric to purchase the city utility in its entirety. Frankly, during that period of time, there was a good deal of acrimony on both sides. As we got closer to the likelihood of an election on that subject, negotiations were again commenced, and frankly took off from a point where we had left off with negotiations and really didn't change a considerable amount from where those negotiations had broken off. But we think we've reached an agreement here that does satisfy the needs of both parties, the needs of the city of Pierre for growth and the needs of Oahe Electric, not only for its growth, but for some stability in their service area. The basis of the agreement is that in sections 21 and 22, the east half of, and I always get confused between them, I think it's the east half of section 22 would remain Oahe Electric service territory, irrespective of any annexation proceedings beyond that. That east half borders the Camelot addition north of Pierre, if that helps you get a perspective on where it's at. In addition, the balance of that section and the other section we're talking about would become the exclusive territory of the city of Pierre once the city either annexes or chooses to extend its utilities into those sections. So both sides are guaranteed some certainty as to where their service territory is going to be. Also included in the agreement, which we think is an important part of the agreement, so that there's no differentiation between city residents, is that area served by Oahe Electric will provide their services at the same rates and under the same technical conditions as those services are provided by the Pierre City utility. So we believe that it's seamless in that regard. The consumer out there should notice no difference in service between the two entities providing that service. There is provision, and this agreement takes into consideration the fact that there may be annexation occur in other areas of the city, and this may be the area where we had the most difficulty really in reaching agreement. In the provisions of the agreement provide that as the city annexes areas outside of sections 21 and 22, existing services or service locations where Oahe Electric is providing service will remain with Oahe Electric, but new service locations will be served by the city of Pierre in those newly annexed areas. The agreement, of course, takes into account that we can reach further agreement as to perhaps setting territories in those areas to avoid having lines crossing each other, but we've left that for future agreement, not knowing exactly what possibilities may exist in the future. When we presented our petition to the commission, we were requested to perhaps more adequately define service location, and as Dave Larson and myself attempted to reach a definition of that, we appreciated why we were requested to provide that definition, because it was certainly not easy to come up with something that, although I think we agreed from the outset pretty much what we all thought it was, actually clarifying that in language that everyone could accept proved to be a little more difficult than that. we had originally thought. We have provided an addendum to the territorial agreement, which has been executed by both parties, defining the service location, and essentially it's a platted, separately identified geographic area. It's also limited in that service being provided by Oahe Electric in that specific location to a specific customer could be expanded to some degree, but not beyond three separate structures or 3 meters. So I think the parties, I think, are in agreement as to those provisions. We think that the agreement does address the future needs of both parties quite well. We would hope that the agreement itself doesn't set any particular timelines. It's our intent and our hope that it could be indeterminate in time. Obviously, as we go off into the future, there may be other agreements need to be reached between the parties. But, in a nutshell, I guess, is the how we got to the agreement and the essence of the agreement. I'd try and answer the questions, and Mayor Eastnick is here, as well as Dave Larson and Brad Scott from Milwaukee Electric. So,
great.
Thank you.
Mr. Scott, did you or council have anything to offer before staff? Okay, thanks. Okay, wonderful, thanks. Ms. Kramer, Mr. Bettman?
Staff would just recommend approval.
This service location, this is a question for Mr. Bettman or Mr. Bettman, Ms. Kramer. Service location, the definition appears to be pretty clear, but I know we've struggled with this or with some commission action in the past. Any concerns about the definition the parties offered up?
I don't have any.
This is Karen Kramer. I would agree with Mr. Bettman. We have looked at it, and as Mr. Brown said, they did struggle with the language and worked on it a long time, and it appears to be reasonable and all-encompassing, but I guess we'll see.
I have a question for Mr. Scott. I know the agreement calls for the co-op prices to mirror the city's prices in those areas under agreement. Can you give me an idea? And I know, obviously, your entity is not rate regulated, but just out of curiosity, what does that do to the rates in comparison to your existing members?
Oh, well, hopefully it's going to stabilize, Commissioner Johnson, because we are going to be stabilizing our rate base, and we know for certain what we're going to have out there. The other thing with matching the rates, you know, with city development, it's going to be higher density development, so our cost to serve is going to be tremendously quite a bit lower than what our more rural customers are. So by doing that, we are able to offer a lower rate. And I think the agreement says that the people will have a choice of the rates in that area, because Hawaii Electric does offer a 3.6-cent electric rate, and if they choose to go with that, then they would be on Hawaii Electric's base rate. But if they don't, they have the option to go with the city's municipal rate.
And what's the city's rate?
Todd, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's right at an $8 fixed charge and
5.5 cents.
I think it's
5.4.
Okay.
Per kilowatt hour.
Okay. So. Thanks very much. I know that staff, I'd seen a letter, I think, from Ms. Kramer to landowners or probably service customers in that area. Did the commission receive any responses to those letters?
We didn't receive anything back from any of the customers in that area.
Chairman Saar, any questions?
Just to follow up to that one, Ms. Kramer, how many people approximately were contacted?
I think there are around 30 or 20, some.
Okay, great. That's ballpark's good enough. Thank you.
Yeah. That included current customers and landowners that may not have service. So.
Great. Thank you very much.
And I believe that letter indicated the time and place of this hearing. Is there anybody in the audience that would want to offer any further testimony on this? Mr. Brown, you offered some description of what sections 21 and 22 are. I didn't see a map or anything in the filing. You said near the Camelot edition. Can you tell me where 21 is and where 22 is? And if you're not the right person to offer that, that's fine.
Yes, and I believe there was a map that's submitted with the data request, but whether I can pull it out immediately. But essentially, sections 21 and 22 are bordered by U.S. Highway or South Dakota Highway 1804 and Highway 14. And on Highway 14 on the south, 1804 on the west, and the Camelot housing area on the east. And on the North Range Road, if you're familiar, I believe, would border it on the north. There are some housing in that area, but very limited development at this point. But again, just because of the lay of the land, largely flat area, it is anticipated that that's going to be a very likely place for expansion of the city.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And Ms. Kramer did just hand me a map. Commissioners obviously aren't privy to discovery, but this is very helpful. So thanks. Chairman Starr, anything else?
No further questions from me. Thank you.
With that, I would move that the commission approve the territorial agreement.
And I will second.
Okay. Concludes motion. That concludes action on that docketed item. Now on to item number 3, EL06-012. In the matter of joint request for an electric service rights exception between Sioux Valley Southwestern and Northern States Power Company, doing business as Xcel. And the question for the commission is, shall the commission approve the joint request for an electric service rights exception? Mr. Wilcox?
Yes, Commissioner Jim Wilcox here, Xcel Energy, Sioux Valley Energy, and Xcel have entered into an agreement to exchange the service rights to allow Xcel Energy to serve a security light for the Fraternal Order of Police is out along Highway 42 east of Sioux Falls. In co-op territory, we have a distribution line that runs along there, and it's just it's cheaper, I guess, less costly for us to provide it than for the co-ops, and so we've come to agreement. And the FOPA has agreed as well, and so we come before the commission just seeking approval of this exception.
Mr. Solem or Bettman or Ms. Kramer?
The only thing I would add that this exception is not a desire to change the service area assignments and would be terminated upon a removal or abandonment of such service. Staff recommends approval of this exception as it avoids unnecessary duplication of facilities, provides for adequate electric service to the customer affected, and promotes the efficient and economical use and development of electric systems of the utilities as outlined in SDCL 4934A55 for such exceptions. We recommend approval.
Chairman Starr, any questions or comments?
No, I don't.
I believe a motion is in order.
I would move approval.
Second. That takes us past the electricity portion of the agenda into telecommunications, TC05-184, in the matter of the application of Pacific Centrex Services for a COA to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. Is the moving party on the line? And if not, Mr. Knadel, Ms. Graff?
Thank you, Commissioner. Pacific Centrex Services, Inc. filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide resold interexchange telecommunications services throughout South Dakota in resold and facilities bases, local exchange service in the existing service areas of Quest. The company has agreed to restrictions for offering prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards and collecting deposits and advance payments, and has requested a waiver from ARSD 2010-2402 Pren 8 and 2010-3203 Pren 11, which requires the filing of a current cash flow statement. Staff recommends approval of the application subject to rural safeguards and subject to the condition that the company not offer any prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, and not accept or require any deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission. And staff would further recommend a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402, Pren 8, and 2010-3203, Pren 11. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Knadel. Anything from you, Chairman Starr?
No.
I will move that the Commission grant the COA to Pacific Centric Services with the waivers and conditions recommended by staff.
I would second.
In the matter of the approval of agreements in dockets TC06, 023, and TC06-24, and that's in the matter of the filing of approval of Type 1 and Type 2 paging connection service agreements between Quest and Vantech, and in the matter of the filing for approval of Type 1 wireless interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Kentech Communications. Ms. Siebold?
We have no comments, Commissioner.
Okay. Staff, have anything on this item?
Yes, Commissioner Johnson. Staff would just say that these agreements were properly filed. They contain no discriminatory language, and that no comments were filed during the 20-day period, and so we'd recommend approval of both agreements.
Anything from commissioners? Hearing none, a motion is in order. And I'll move the commission approve the above agreements.
And I second.
Telecommunications item number 3, in the matter of the approval of amendments to agreements in TC06-025 and TC06-026. And that's approval of amendments to interconnection agreements between Quest and Midcontinent and between Quest and NOS Communications. Staff?
If Quest has nothing, again, we would recommend that, or we would comment that these were properly filed. They contain no discriminatory language, and no comments were filed in the above amendments, and we would recommend approval of them both.
Any comments from any of the parties? Hearing none, anything from commissioners?
None from me.
Then the motion is in order. And I will move to approve the amendments to the above agreements.
And I second.
Moving on to administration, item number 1, the establishment of the gross receipts tax levy for the 2007 fiscal year. Ms. Forney.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. As I'm sure you're well aware, the Fixed Utilities Division of the Public Utilities Commission is funded by the gross receipts tax. And under South Dakota codified law, on April 1st of each year, all of the utilities are required to file with our office a statement of the gross receipts that they have derived via intrastate revenue. So it'll be revenue generated for strictly intrastate sales. Based on those sales, those revenues, we then assess a fee. It can be a maximum of 0.0015 or and a minimum of $250. At this point, we've received the majority of the filings from the companies that we regulate. And based on those filings, I would recommend assessing the .0015 with a $250 minimum. That levy will be assessed, and bills will go out, and those are due and payable on July 15th of 2006.
Thanks, Ms. Forney. Are any of the companies that this tax is levied against, do they have anything to add? Then we'll move to commissioner questions. Ms. Forney, this is the same rate as was assessed last year, correct?
That's correct, and the year before.
Okay. Do we hear any comments or questions that were out of the ordinary from the providers?
No, I'd say the majority of the questions we receive are from new telecommunications companies that don't understand that $250 minimum. So I answer that question repeatedly, but that's, I'd say, the single biggest question we receive.
And do we have an idea whether or not that $250 minimum is typical in other states?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Thanks. And I won't need it for action today, certainly, but I'd just be curious at some time in the future what how we compare to other states based on a minimum charge. Any comments from any other staff? Chairman Starr, any questions or comments?
No, I have none, but I would move to establish the rate and assess the gross receipts tax.
I will
recommend it by staff.
I will second. Now on to item number 2 under administration in the matter of a contract with Spiegel and McDermott. General Counsel, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I think everyone here knows, on April 25th, Northwestern Corporation announced a proposed, well, actually an executed agreement and plan of merger with Babcock & Brown Infrastructure Limited and its subsidiaries, and pursuant to that, Babcock & Brown would acquire Northwestern. It would do it via a merger-type arrangement. Based upon at least what I've seen so far, it's probable, almost a certainty, that the transaction will require approval by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission under Section 203 of the Federal Power Act. It will also require Hart-Scott-Rodino approval, which is an antitrust review. There may be some other things, too. I'm not sure yet whether anymore in with the repeal of PUCA, whether SEC approval will be needed or not. But it's possible that there may be other federal agency approvals, particularly because this is a foreign-headquartered company. That's all possible. I think the primary emphasis for us is Section 203 of the Power Act. I am bringing before the Commission whether or not the Commission would choose to retain, and here we do that via contract, the law firm of Spiegel & McDermott, a Washington, D.C. law firm that specializes in FERC-related proceedings, to retain them to represent the Commission in the FERC proceedings, to give us general advice and counsel with respect to the transaction, and to handle our interventions before FERC, and if we choose to do so, and I don't think we will, but if we were to choose to get involved in the Hart-Scott-Rodino review or whatever, to represent us in those proceedings as well. I have given Commissioner Johnson, who's here, a copy of a draft agreement that I did up, which is in the general form that the Commission's used in the past. In fact, I used the current agreement that we have with Spiegel & McDermott as the model for that. I cleaned up some things and changed a few things. The key element of it, I think, is, you know, it describes it describes the representation. Generally, it would be a retention of them as our attorney in these proceedings. You would still be the client and would still be in the driver's seat in terms of what you elect to do, and that could be either a very minimal involvement in terms of filing comments, et cetera, or it could be a very aggressive approach in terms of an intervention and a very active and aggressive advocacy of a particular outcome before FERC. Obviously, the choice of what you choose to do is going to affect things like cost and what you might be able to accomplish in the federal proceeding. And, again, that might be influenced by whether or not it turns out that we have approval authority here at the state. To the extent we do, it may lessen the need for aggressiveness at the federal level. As just a placeholder, we have to have an approval of a dollar amount under a state contract. We can't have open-ended contracts. I put in the number $50,000. I checked with the deputy executive director as to the viability of that number before putting that number in there, and she indicated she felt that was acceptable given our current budget situation. But that's subject to your discretion, and this we've not signed anything, so feel free to do what you think is right in terms of that. And that's all I have.
Questions, Chairman Starr?
Well, probably more of a comment, and I appreciate Mr. Smith's diligence on this issue, and I think especially with something as important as acquisition of a South Dakota utility, we need to be prepared to step in and go out and aggressively advocate if necessary for our state's consumers. And I think a good example of how that's worked well in the past was the Northwestern bankruptcy, where we hired an experienced counsel with expertise in the area. They were able to keep us abreast of what's going on in the docket, able to make recommendations, and in that case, we did not have to go forward and have be a long, drawn-out and expensive involvement, but we're prepared and we're getting the information necessary to continue to make that evaluation on an ongoing basis. And I think this makes a lot of sense to be prepared, to have counsel in place, to be there on the front end, and if need be, to get in there and be there on behalf of our state's consumers. So I thank staff for their work on this, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
I know this firm, Mr. Smith, has done some work with the commission before, and in fact is doing some work with us right now. Can you briefly describe what they've done for us in the past?
Right, and I intended to do that, and I apologize for not doing that. Actually, this particular law firm has represented the commission in proceedings for years. I think it dates way back into the some of the original. My recollection, I think I worked on this case when I was a law clerk for Justice Wollman. I think they date way back to the original Northwestern rate case, which was in the 1970s, and that was a man named, I think his name was Alan Roth, who was quite the lawyer and did an excellent job.
Now, if that was back when you were an intern, that was probably before the establishment of FERC. That was a Federal Power Commission or something?
I think that might have been. It definitely was probably before you were born, okay. I think. At any rate, we've had excellent results over the years using this law firm. Mr. Roth is no longer with the firm, unfortunately, but the people who have taken his place have done very well for us. As you know, we just had a victory, at least at the agency level, before FERC in the Williston case, and we've also just extended we've requested Spiegel's action to pursue the case at the next level to represent us before the appeal that's being taken by Williston. And so I don't know, unless Dave or one of the other people at the table here has an observation, they've done a good job for us. I might also add that with respect to the Williston case, for example, we put in, way back in 2001, we put in a dollar amount in that contract. They represented us now for pretty close to 5 years without exhausting that amount we put in there. And I feel confident this firm's way of doing business can be trusted in terms of not viewing a dollar amount as we feel an obligation to spend that much as soon as we can, but they've so far been the kind of law firm that does what's necessary and what we ask them to do, and they seem to do it in a way that doesn't result in the unnecessary expenditure of money.
Certainly good news. And I do. I would echo Chairman Sarr's comments. I mean, I think this is important. Certainly FERC proceedings are a whole different kind of animal, and it's good to have, you know, someone in D.C. who's very experienced dealing with these situations to help us, provide us some general advice on how we move forward. And the bottom line is we just don't know exactly what the commission's interest or involvement in this issue is going to be moving forward. I think there are so many different issues for staff and commissioners to dive into and peel back some of the layers of the onion. And I agree. I think this is a good move. And with that, Chairman Sarr, unless you have something else, I think we're ready for a motion.
Then I will move that the commission approve a contract to retain Spiegel and McDermott as legal counsel to represent the commission before FERC and such other federal administrative review or approval proceedings in which the commission elects to intervene or comment.
And I would second. That completes our action on this morning's agenda. Two announcements. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held May 23rd, 2006 at 9:30 a.m. in room 412 at Pierce, South Dakota. And finally, commission meetings are scheduled for June 13th and July 11th, 2006. I would thank everyone for their participation this morning. And thanks for appearing telephonically, Chairman Sarr.
Thank you. Yeah.